whisper when we start the Saw streams?
I don't know anymore.
I'm just jamming.
That intro just gets me every time. Nobody can see us before we start the show, but I'm usually dancing. I'm just kind of bopping along, air drumming. Welcome to Kasa Live, everyone. Happy Saturday. Thank you for being here. And if you're watching on the replay, thank you for tuning in as well. Definitely some familiar faces in chat. I already can't words. I'm already flustered. It's the intro music, I tell you. V8, Addy, Face Me, Peggy, welcome. Welcome, though. Welcome. Apathy Miller, welcome. Welcome, everybody. Welcome to Kasa Live. We definitely have some fun topic discussion things to talk about today. I don't even know what to call it. A deep dive? It's kind of a deep dive. Yeah. A long time ago, we've gone through many iterations here on Kasa Live where we had different schedules and like the way we would format this show. And we used to do a good, bad, and ugly around like science stuff. That was like Kristen's big thing was the good, bad, and ugly in the science department, which was great. And then we kind of shelved that, but we're bringing it back kind of today in our discussion about disposables.
We haven't shelved it. We just haven't had a chance to do it again, but we definitely will again one of these days.
Yeah, we'll pull it back off the shelf. We'll dust it off and bring it back for sure. But we are going to talk about disposables today. Are you guys hip to that? You guys know what disposables are? Have you ever heard of those? I feel like everybody has at this point. I remember when disposables like first came out, and the first time I had ever bought one, I was actually on my way to the Rochester Department of Health for the flavor ban hearing. And I was like, I just want to take something with me. I was going to go buy like a pod device. And then I saw on the shelf like the first iterations of the hides. And they were like these little square. They almost looked like cardboard clicky top things. And I was like, what are these? And they were like, oh, it's a little one-time puff, you know, I don't know how many puff thing. And I was like, sure, why not? How much are they? And the guy was like, $5. And I was like, sure, I'll take one with me. And that was the first time I remember seeing disposables outside of some of like the single-use Sigalikes that used to be around at the gas stations. And since then, disposables have changed quite a bit. Yeah, blown up. They're just literally everywhere.
I don't use them myself, but one of my adult kids does. And
I love that you use the term adult kids.
Well, I want to make sure I said that after the confusion earlier, if I couldn't remember how old my kid was when we were talking before the show started. I just think it's funny because to me, disposables are almost like coming full circle from the early days back in 2009 when you had these little tiny things that didn't hold much and, you know, weren't refillable. I mean, originally they weren't made to be refillable. I mean, they gave you the little new things to put on top, you know, the new carts or whatever we used to call them that looked like little cigarettes. And it feels like we almost came full circle. It's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. The only disposable products I ever bought were that first weekend in 2013 when I switched and I bought a Logic and I bought an Enjoy King. Mm-hmm. And after that, it's all been, you know, something refillable cartridges, tanks, mods, et cetera. I mean, I don't vape anymore, but I haven't tried any of the new generation of disposables, but.
Well, I can reassure you because the first e-cigarette I ever used was in 2007 and it was an Enjoy King and it did not work for me. It was actually something that at that point in time, because I didn't fully quit until 2017. But that product solidified in my mind at the time that e-cigarettes were just this gimmicky thing that was never going to become, you know, anything. It was just like this cool, like, oh, I can smoke inside. You know what I mean? Because that's what I bought it for, was so I could go puff on it in the bathroom at the restaurant and not have to take cigarette breaks. But it did nothing for me. I used it and I didn't feel satisfied, you know, but this is again 2011, so these were early generations, and hats off to folks who quit in 2011 or before with the products at that point.
I think I want to say it was 2015 2016 when my aunt moved in with us, and she had been resistant to trying vaping for the longest time, and I even set up a whole outdoor room for her to smoke in when she moved in with us. And we were at Walmart one day and they had Enjoy Kings there, and I said, you know, these are supposed to be a lot, like, I've heard a lot of good things about them. They're supposed to be very, like, cigarette-like and stuff. You know, all you gotta do is puff on them. Don't have to mess around. No fuss, no muss. And she's like, okay. And she threw it on the conveyor belt, you know. And, like, maybe about a week and a half later, she was like, you know, it'd be really nice if these were rechargeable. And I'm like, got her. Yeah. Yeah. Like a month later, she was in the vape shop with us buying a really pretty purple mod, you know.
Sure. Yeah.
And after that, it was all good to go. But so I guess we should start with the our deep dive. And
you want to go right into it now that we've kind of prefaced the all right,
we're gonna start talking. So
we're gonna dive. Yeah, we can't start talking anymore until we do this. All right, put on your goggles and scuba gear. Gear. I told you I can't words today, you guys. It's been a long day already. I'm sorry. Put on your goggles and scuba gear because we're gonna dive right into it. Kristen has some slides set up for us to work our way through this good, bad, and ugly about disposables.
And just to preface this, this is a very nuanced thing. There is no simple answers to this. And this is about as basic as you can get. It probably expands so far beyond this and all the things that we're doing today, but there's only so much we can do in an hour. So we're just going to touch on some things and maybe at the end we'll have time to do sort of talking about solutions and such. So this was the first one that, you know, and Logan, now that I'm thinking about it, if I'm going to be running this, maybe you might want to keep an eye on the chats. The banner. Because I forgot about that.
All right, chat, you're all mine.
So first of all, I thought we'd just kind of cover the good. Like, why do some people support? And I guess I should preface all of this with that there's a contention about it. There's a bunch of advocates in THR who say, look, disposables are helping people quit. They're converting people. They're doing whatever. And there's a lot of good that they do, you know, tobacco harm reduction. And then there's other people who are like, you know, this is causing trouble for the industry, causing trouble for advocacy. It's not a good thing. We need to get rid of all of them. And they celebrate when they're going to be, I would say banned, but I would really, they'd be double banned because they're already not legal. And, you know, and both sides have good points. So we're going to kind of just go through those today is what I was just going to say. So so one of the points I would say that that people would say is good about them is that they are very much available where cigarettes are sold. And the argument with that is that if somebody comes in to buy some cigarettes, having those there as an alternative that they can see and they can get right there and it might get them started on switching over to something that's safer for them. So that would be something that's good about them. And that's a very big thing, I would say, for a lot of advocates who support disposables is that we need to have vapor products being sold where cigarettes are being sold. It just makes sense.
And of course, just to jump in, the disposables or pod-based, cartridge-based products are out of all the vapor products, I mean, compared to open systems, they are most appropriately sold in convenience stores next to cigarettes because they don't require a lot of extra instruction and people can just come in and have their curiosity piqued or just, you know, fulfill their order and move on with their day without having to, you know, sit down and be given a tutorial about how to use it.
Right. And that's one of the topics that's on our list of why they're good. So Alex is jumping ahead.
I just wanted to add one note to that it isn't everywhere either. Right. They're not every convenience store that has, you know, cigarettes up for display has.
Yeah, Walmart and Walgreens don't.
I don't even think, does Walmart even still sell cigarettes? I don't think they do.
They sell, well, my town they do, and they sell pouches and stuff, but nothing vape.
Yeah, interesting. But I know that there's only, in my town at least, one specific convenience store gas station that actually carries any disposable products outside of like a pod base, like a, you know, a tobacco owned like Juul or a I don't know, like an Enjoy or something like that. But as far as like other, I guess what a lot of people think of like all in one disposable products, There's only one store locally in my town anyway that does have them up on the shelf. So I think it's definitely a good thing, but I just wanted to make sure people understood, like, not every gas station across America is doing that.
Well, in my town they are, but I swear not every gas station has.
Yeah. I need to come to your town.
Right. So another plus that people would argue is that because they're so simple and they're very limited and they run out and all that, it's because of the cons of them. And also because, well, I guess I'll go from where we were, is that they're so convenience stores, people try vapes and then they go, huh, this is kind of cool. Maybe I'll go check out that vape shop. You know, maybe they might go into a vape shop because the vape shop sells them. You know, there's places that sell. I mean, and both the vape shops in my area carry disposable and CBD and everything else. Well, one's a tobacco shop. So that's another argument for having disposables, having that easy reach next to the cigarettes, easy to start product, because it actually could bring business into vape shops rather than, I know a lot of people think of it as a competition. And I probably should have put this in the cons, and I'll try to remember it later on, but I don't have it in the cons, so I guess I'll just mention it now, is that one con is that it might sell people off, you know, pull people off of vaping. Like, is this vaping? This is awful. Why would I vape? You know? So, I mean, that is an argument against it, I suppose. Did you guys have any other thoughts on that one?
No, I mean, this is in one way or another kind of what happened to me. It just took 6 more years to get me into that vape shop. But having used, we talked about this before the stream or whatever, or maybe it was right at the very beginning. My first use of an e-cigarette was an Enjoy King years ago, 2011. And it was something I had thought back to when I made the decision, you know, I need to quit smoking. There's a vape shop in town. I've used one of these before. It didn't work at all for me, but that was a long time ago. I'm going to go see what is available now. You know, 6 years later, I was like, maybe the technology has improved. They have entire stores of these things now. Right. So it was enough, you know, down the road to get me to go and check it out and give it a shot, which I'm glad I did, because a week later I quit smoking. But there are plenty of people who go and they buy, you know, whatever it is from a convenience store, whether that's a disposable or any of the other products available at convenience stores. And they might try that for a couple of weeks and they go, well, I wonder what else is out there. I wonder if there's a cheaper way. I wonder if there's I wonder if there are more flavors. I wonder if there are just more options available to me. And there's the vape shop.
Well, it's kind of like when you buy a car and then you see that car everywhere. It's like, if you switch to vaping, it's like, oh, there's a vape shop. Oh, there's a vape shop. Maybe I should go check out the vape shop. You know, it could work that way.
I think there's unfortunately less of that now, but.
Well, you know, and I live in a state that has passed the PMTA directory bill. And well, they actually snuck it into an alcohol bill, but that's a whole nother story. And, you know, soon we might be at a point where, you know, nothing's going to be able to get sold. So vape shops might have to, if they're going to have any kind of, inventory, they may have to, if they don't already carry them, they may have to start if they're going to compete, or just become tobacco stores or just close down. Who knows?
Yeah. There are very few vape shops left in New York at this point. And the ones that do remain tend to be, you know, kind of multi-product shops,
tobacco shops.
The pattern has been, I guess, diversifying the product, so it's more into the, I don't know if it's the, if I'm using it correctly, but the kind of the health and wellness industry, you know, alternative health and wellness, maybe, you know, so your CBD, kratom, all the different mushroom powders that are available, other stuff like that. And then, of course, you know, just because they ban it doesn't mean it goes away. And we'll talk about that later. But, you know, all of this stuff is still available. So,
and, you know, and the thing is that, you know, well, no, I'm going to wait. We're not got that. We haven't gotten that far yet. It's so easy to get ahead of yourself on these.
Sorry.
Okay. This is kind of what Alex was touching on before. And, you know, this is kind of a silly graphic, but I just happened to find it online. But it just, you know, it really is. I mean, if you think about how complicated, I mean, that's one of the reasons why my aunt didn't want to start, because she saw us messing with coils and cleaning stuff and refilling stuff and, you know, yeah, doing all that. You know, then you've got people who get into like building coils and, you know, sure, making their own e-liquid, all that kind of stuff. You know, it can get pretty overwhelming pretty fast. And so she had no interest whatsoever in that. So it was the Enjoy King, which finally got her started in it. And because it was just simple, she just had to take it out of the pack and use it, you know. So
yeah,
that's one good thing for getting people started, at least. You know, I mean, if you have somebody coming into a vape shop, even a vape shop owner is going to tell you that, you know, good business would be not to just overwhelm them with, you know, rebuildable coils and making, you know, the stuff like that. Sure. They would want to give them something simple, easy to use to get them, you know, a starter pack, basically.
Yeah. If the start of the conversation is, hey, listen, do you have a drill and a couple of fish hooks and things like this? I'm going to teach you how to spin your own coils. But yeah, I know, definitely, you know, the graphic on the left, the whole mod and tank is I believe Scott Gottlieb so eloquently coined them, contraptions at one point. Yeah, they are. They're really not like beginner products, even though at one point that was really what was available to a lot of people, you know, years and years ago were mods and tanks. And, you know, thankfully, you know, early pre-built coils, pre-made coil heads, even though a lot of things back in the day leaked and didn't run nearly as well as they do now. But yeah, I mean, what I'm using is a refillable, but even, you know, something like a Juul is you click it in, you vape it. And with a disposable, you just skip the click. You peel out two little plugs at the ends of like the rechargeable, if it has a rechargeable spot, and a little silicone plug on the tip, and you vape it. You know, it's as simple as ripping the cellophane and foil off a pack of cigarettes and lighting up a cigarette. There are very few steps involved. And I think a massive appeal to a lot of people. And I'll highlight on this easy to use before we move along topic here. There were a few things in chat here I had kind of thrown up earlier. Right, this one right here, people with arthritis, excuse me, fine motor skill problems, etc., may not be able to re-wick or build coils, or, you know, even something as simple as putting in a pre-built coil head and like screwing down a tank and squeezing a bottle to refill that tank, things like that, right, can be, excuse me, a massive hurdle for people who have, you know, some complications with their hands and things like that. So yeah, that ease of use, outside of just making it as simple as we can for people who smoke, this is a big reason why those products right there are an excellent thing to have on the market.
Well, I mean, I have to point out that having started this back in 2009 with Sigalikes were designed like disposables. They were meant to be as simple as possible. They were pre-filled little carts and you just popped them on the battery. And I don't think there was, I'm not even sure if there was even a recharger for it. Oh, I might've had the screw-in recharger. I can't remember now. I can't remember if our first ones had that or not, but they were, because the manufacturers knew that people who smoke just have to take it out of the pack and put a lighter to it. So they were trying to keep it as simple as possible. It was the vape community that made them completely complicated because they're mods, they're modifications, you know, developing the tanks and the coils and the, you know, squeeze boxes and all that other kind of stuff, you know, stronger, longer batteries, all that other kind of stuff all came from the community. So most of us who got into it early actually are, you know, it was something that was, you know, plug and play. It wasn't something that was complicated at all. So it kind of, like I said, it kind of came full circle back to that. Alex,
yeah. Original mods were like flashlights and like boxes, like literal, like boxes, like
they made a lot of soda cans, all sorts of stuff. It was crazy.
Sure, yeah.
Alex, did you have any other thoughts on that one?
No, I was. You just reminded me though of the Smokeless Image products. They had the PCC, the personal charging case, I think.
Yep, I remember that.
And that was, you know, the cartridges came sealed. They weren't meant to be refilled, so that was disposable. But the body of the Sigalike was the rechargeable battery. And I remember I had two different sizes, one with you know, one's got long battery life, one's a little shorter, and you could carry them around in the case. It was like a big hunk of plastic that didn't really fit very well in your pocket. But anyway, just memories.
I know. Lots of nostalgia when we talk about earlier products.
This kind of speaks for itself, but I think a lot, you know, it is funny because you'll see the anti-nicotine people going on and on about, you know, oh, this loophole was left that now you've got the disposables and stuff like that. And they're not wrong in a way, because when they decided that they were going to ban, not that, you know, when Juul, there were people crying because they lost their mangled Juuls. I mean, it was crazy. And, you know, they were very, very upset about it. And so what are they going to do? They're not going to switch to tobacco flavored, you know, from that. And the disposables filled a need. It filled an empty space that was left from the federal move on the banning flavors in the pod systems. And then, you know, the anti-vaping, anti-nicotine people are all, why did that happen?
I don't think they were, the mystery was not a mystery.
No, was, I know, but know, they the, pretend.
The Trump administration made a decision, and they decided to create the loophole for disposable products. And some of the reporting is, you know, geared, and I think some of it is true, that, you know, this was made into a political issue. And so, you know, leaving disposables on the market was a political calculation in order to not alienate people who vaped, because, and Kassaw, of course, had a hand in collecting some of this information. We are a group of very passionate consumers. And for a lot of people, this is the single issue that they will vote on. I don't know how true that is today. Obviously, there's a lot more stuff on fire, but you know, that was a message that got to lawmakers. What was this, 2017, 2018? God, I can't even remember all the dates, but you know, back then.
Oh, right. When they
and it of course was, you know, it's legitimate, and it was convincing enough for the Trump administration to leave disposables on the market. But of course, as you mentioned at the very beginning, it's all basically illegal. So there really wasn't a loophole. It was just, I guess, sort of a directive to FDA saying, you know, here's some boundaries for your enforcement discretion.
I know there's some discussion around New York and convenience stores and disposables going on in chat right now. And as a New York resident, I just want to highlight that any flavored disposables sold within the state of New York at a convenience store are already illegal.
Yeah.
They're already illegal. So just bear that in mind. It's already something illegal. There is no allowing of that product to be sold in those convenience stores. It's illegal.
I believe out of any of the states, so New York State, the weird thing about these vapor directory bills is, you know, New York State would actually benefit from having one compared to what we have now. But whenever you hear people talking about the 23 products, which is actually, there's only 15 products that contain nicotine authorized by FDA. That's all that's allowed to be sold in New York State, in terms of
like
vaping.
Across the board, period.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there is not a single flavor other than tobacco on that list.
Yeah. Okay. Yep. So any of that, whether, you know, they're allowed or not, I just wanted to clarify, just because I see there's a bit of a discussion going on in chat. Yeah. They're already illegal.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not, well, it's, I mean, not being allowed. It's just not necessarily being addressed, I think.
And not just New York, everywhere.
No.
Anywhere in the US, everything is already quote unquote illegal, which
technically, sure. If it hasn't received PMTA authorization.
But New York has banned it harder.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. We cracked down here in New York.
Yeah. We're double banned, triple banned.
Yeah. Yeah, can all somebody right. Google how you make something illegal more illegal?
More illegal, right? I struggled with the what graphic to put with this, but and this is sort of a nuanced thing, because it's like, you know, I walk into my vape shop, my local vape shop, and they basically have 3 and 6 milligrams for bottled liquids. So that's pretty limited. But, you know, if you go online, everything's available. Same thing with the disposables. If you go online, you can find anything. But generally, if you walk into a convenience store or a vape shop, the strengths are very limited. But you don't really see, I do see 0 milligram, at least up until recently, 0 milligram was being sold everywhere for sort of a step down thing. But Logan, you were going to make a really good point about this.
Sure. So I'm fortunate enough to live close to a reservation, and that's the vape shop that I go to. So I have a little bit more available to me than a lot of my fellow New Yorkers. I'm not going to name that particular location because obviously there's a bit of a gray area there when it comes to all of that. Where I go to, they have shelves and shelves of disposable products. And typically any of them that do contain nicotine, which is the vast majority of them, the only strengths that I ever see are 5% and 3%. And then when it comes to the 0%, there's a very small little display case where they do carry 0% disposable products. But that is it. As far as step down goes, at least for where I go, the only step down is 50 milligram, 5%, 30 milligram, 3%, or 0%. Which really limits the range. And that's just what's available to me. There are places where plenty of people go where the only thing available in disposables is 5%. There are no other options. Where when we get into open systems, whether you're talking about salts or non-salt freebase nicotine, there is every in-between imaginable, from 50 milligram all the way down to 0. I mean, it does. A lot of places don't do like 2 or 1 anymore. There's a bit of a skip in between, but regardless of that, you could find 48 or 42 or 36 or 24 or 12, 18, what have you. So for folks who are interested in that step down, if the goal is to get from, I'm currently using 50 milligrams and I want to get down to 0, a lot of people want that step down. They don't want to jump from 5 to 0. Or right. From 5% to 3% to 0%. They want to gradually come off of that nicotine. And I think one of the things that can, or a lot of what could be done in this space, and I'll leave that to the solutions, I guess, at the end here. But yeah, that's obviously one of the things in regards to disposables, is there's not a big step down option available to people.
And I want to add to this. I mean, this technically, I think falls under ugly, but a lot of this is, ideally, this is the manufacturers responding to consumer demand.
Sure.
On the other hand, the reality is that these are the only types of products that FDA is authorizing. I think it's worth noting that FDA hasn't authorized anything lower than 2.4%. Actually, Vuse has 1.5%. Sorry. And that's the Vuse Zero, is that the really old one that nobody uses?
They're all really old ones.
Yeah, they're all kind of outdated. I feel like the Ace Pod is probably the newest one. Logic Pro, I remember seeing ads for that in 2017, 2018. It was a nice ad campaign. It's weird to me. It's unsettling to me. And I hate to take this position, but FDA is only authorizing the products that are most likely to keep people coming back for them.
Sure.
And it's one of those things that if anybody's out there trying to make the argument that the Center for Tobacco Products is captured by the tobacco companies, here is something that may qualify as proof of that. And I think it's really unfortunate, and it's not something that is benefiting public health.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
There's a real easy solution here.
Right. This one, I mean, I told a story earlier to you guys about that, I was in my local vape shop, and the manager was using a disposable. And I was like, that's a disposable? I mean, it looked like a mini mod. It looked kind of like my little e-leaf, And I'm like, you just throw that entire thing out. And he's like, yeah. He said, well, I don't. I actually, somehow, because not made to get the battery out, but he breaks it apart, gets the battery out, he melts down the plastic to use in his 3D printer. Yep. Like, we don't all have a free 3D printer. But I said, well, how much is that thing? And he's like, $30. And, you know, like this one, this model here, my adult daughter also uses them too, but this is $24.99 and it's for 10 milliliters. So, I mean, $25 to spend before, instead of spending, you know, and mods aren't even all that expensive anymore. It used to be back in the day that you were dropping a pretty penny for something like that. And so you can get them for under $50 pretty easily now these days. But they are definitely more expensive over time, because if you're spending, I mean, I don't spend that much for, that's how much I spend for, what is this? I think it's 100 milliliters or six. I think that's what I spend for like 100 milliliters. So, I mean, that's crazy. That's crazy to do that. They're cheaper up front. They seem they're cheaper than going into a vape shop and dropping, you know, $100 or whatever. But over time, you're actually spending a lot more.
Yeah. And I think pretty commonly too, for higher milligram, you know, 5% nicotine salts in a bottle, that's about the price that I see for a 30 mil bottle. I think that's pretty common. $20 to $25 for a 30 mil bottle of 5%, which, sure, there's an upfront cost, which is something that, you know, we've discussed upfront costs of switching from, you know, smoking to e-cigarettes in plethora at this point on this show. Years ago, we had that conversation as well. But once you get that upfront cost out of the way, you've bought your pod device, you've bought your tank, you've bought your mod, what have you, your device itself. If you're using a tank that's pre-built coils or pods, there's the cost of those, sure. And that's going to range depending on the product. The pods that I use are $15 for a 4-pack. So what is that? Like $4, $3.50 or something like that for a pod, somewhere in that range. And then a bottle of e-liquid, which when you break it down, every one of those is a fraction of what I'm going to spend if I were solely using a disposable, you know, at 5%, 10 mil capacity, whatever. Right. I could probably cut that number down by into a fourth of that per same amount of puffs, what have you. So yeah, definitely a more expensive product over time.
Okay. And kind of for the same reason that we said it was a good thing that it's sold by the cigarettes, it's also in a way a bad thing. And this kind of also goes back to the whole stepping down with the liquids, you know, the nicotine strengths and stuff like that. A lot of times you got young guys like this who are behind the counter. They don't care if they're selling you a vape or a Reese's peanut butter cup. You know, I mean, it's to them, they're just selling. They're not going to be there and say, hey, you might want to try this or you might want to try that. Or, you know, here's how you can quit smoking with it if you step down. And, you know, there's not some, they're just there to sell you whatever you throw onto the counter. And that is definitely a drawback, because people will buy them. They won't know how to use them. I mean, I remember, you know, in vape shops, they would teach, you know, they'd warn people, it's not like inhaling smoke, it's moisture, it's going to be different, you know, and prepare them for that, because, oh, it's so harsh. It's like, well, this is how you do it. And which strengths to start with and all that other stuff. So that's a con too, for it being into convenience stores. You don't get the same guidance that you would with a vape shop, or that a vape shop should. I've been to some bad vape shops too that don't help much. Here, get this rebuildable thing. It's like, you're kidding, right? But yeah.
Yeah, I spent an hour that day that I decided I needed, like, I was going to go to the vape shop. This is my last Hail Mary at quitting smoking, or this is just going to be the thing that kills me. I spent an hour at that vape shop. And thankfully to the owner, Kevin, at the time, who spent that hour just talking to me. I'm glad it was a slow day, right? But spent an hour discussing these products with me and helping me figure out exactly the flavor, the strength, the product to start with. You know, everything that this man knew about these products, he just laid on the table. Now, that's overwhelming for a lot of people. I understand. Maybe I'm an outlier here, but I can't tell you how grateful I was to have that vape shop interaction that day that I walked in. because there's a good chance if I had had a really poor interaction or somebody at the counter who just says, yeah, dude, buy this. Like, that's cool. Whatever. Here's your change. See you later.
Right.
I may have had a completely different, you know, situation happen with me quitting smoking. And then that vape shop later on, you know, I couldn't walk in there without spending 45 minutes at the place. And I think the vape shop was, for a lot of people, that community, right? Before people got online and joined forums or, you know, Discords or whatever, what have you, the vape shop was the vape community for people. And those interactions, you know, really solidified everything for a lot of people.
Yeah.
So, I think if I'd had your vape shop experience when I switched in 2013, I would have spent a lot less money, and it still applies to this discussion because of what we just talked about with cost. Mm-hmm. You know, the having that instruction from somebody who knows the products, I know is incredibly helpful. So.
Oh yeah. You know, and I think because of my kind of poor introduction to e-cigarettes years prior to that, I was so skeptical. But I was really fortunate that I had that interaction with who I had that interaction with, because it was just like, it was the warmest welcome to vaping that anybody could have had. It was just like, no, man, come here. Let me teach you, kid. You know, I say kid, I was 23, 22, but.
And in a way, this is an argument. This is an argument for vape shop owners who are so angry about the whole disposable thing, that this might be a good sign that you need to carry things in your shop, not necessarily disposables that, you know, aren't allowed or whatever, but things that are very simple to use that people can, you know, a lot of people didn't want to carry things like the Enjoy Kings and stuff like that because, oh no, you know, that's big tobacco.
Back then that, it wasn't.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
back then Enjoy was an independent company.
But it's a good argument that if you want to pull those people into your shop instead of them going to the convenience store and buying that vape, you need to let them know that you've got something that's convenient and affordable and that you can upsell them to later to the other things with the pros about open systems. But if they never walk into your shop because you don't have anything else to sell them to start with, you're never going to be able to have a chance to upsell that customer. So this might be a good argument for having something to draw them in. Like Juul, they refuse to sell Juul. There's a lot of places that refuse to sell Juul. You know, a Juul sign on your door might actually draw customers in, and eventually you might be able to sell them to something else, you know.
I had conversations with vape shop owners years ago that when Juul first hit the market, they brought them in. There were plenty of vape shops that had Juul displays, had them on the, you know, out and readily available, and then kind of through Juul being Juul, a lot of them stopped carrying that product, but sure. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Yeah. And this one's the problem. Mm-hmm. And this kind of could have gone to like the ugly as well, as far as just being the optics of it, you know, but that there, you're not going to see, you don't see mod type stuff sold in this way. Really. It's the cheap stuff coming from overseas or over borders, and this is how kids are getting. I mean, Snapchat and TikTok, I mean, it's crazy how they're selling those things, and that is going to be a tick against them, because it's bad, because they shouldn't be doing that. You know, there's no age verification going on, you know this is going to people who wouldn't just be able to walk into a convenience store. You don't sell this on TikTok and Snapchat. That's kids, I'm sorry, that's young adults and teens who are on those apps for the most part. And you're not, adults aren't going to buy vape. They can walk across the street into the gas station. They don't have to go to TikTok to order stuff. So that's bad. You know, it's bad that happens. And that's what bad thing about specifically, I would say, these disposable products, but I don't know a lot about it. So I'm kind of just throwing that out there. So don't skewer me on that one.
Look, I still get hit up on X, Twitter, at least once a month for disposables, cheap disposables, you know, real shady THC products, all sorts of stuff. It happens at least once a month. For a while, it was happening like every other day. Right. And I think, I don't know if the market for X has just calmed down and I'm not on TikTok, so I'm not getting as much of it now.
Right.
And the main Kasa inbox has been getting Chinese spammers for years.
Oh yeah, you know, I get it.
Cool. Ask them for money.
Fill that order, you know. All
ask
that
them
stuff.
For money.
Yeah, I'm getting on social media all the time, trying to, you know. We have good vape.
It's like, yeah, okay. just hit them back with that. Like, listen, you could support us, though. You know.
Yeah, but there's a whole thing about foreign contributions to 501c's. So
But the thing is that gives ammunition to the enemy. You know, yeah, this gives ammunition because just being on Twitter is one thing. That's mostly adults, but you know, TikTok and Snapchat are so young adult teen oriented, and that makes advocates' jobs harder, and that makes vape shop owners' jobs harder, and people who are trying to do things the right way, who are doing Tobacco 21 and have, you know, carding people when they come in, or they're 21 and older store, or they get lumped in with the characters that are doing this, and that's not fair to them. So because they follow the law, the laws change, they will continue to follow the law and get screwed. Whereas these guys will still just go on like nothing ever changed because they weren't following the law to begin with. So why would they start now? Because there's a law on top of the law on top of the law. They just won't, you know, it's just like any other black or gray or illicit or whatever you want to call it market. Right. And at this point, you guys, because we've switched over to the bad, we're supposed to be arguing for the bad side as opposed to arguing the good side. You know, so it's kind of what I'm doing. I'm sort of playing devil's advocate. I mean, I think there's good and bad on anyone. So.
Sure. But. Sure. Yeah. There's pros and cons across the board for disposables.
And this is one that we're seeing around a lot. Yeah. And, you know, at first I was kind of like, you know, yeah, I suppose it's not great, you know, but, you know, when it comes to regular, you know, open systems and stuff, you're throwing away coils, people are throwing away batteries, people are throwing away empty nicotine bottles.
Sure.
So, I mean, there is that, but then I saw stuff like this and it was just like, ugh. And when I went, when I was talking to that vape shop manager and he said, you just throw that whole, what looked like a mini mod to me away with a tank and everything. I was just like, you can't recycle the battery. You can't, you know, there's nothing. And that's just bad. I mean, that's just not good.
We can. Everything except for the liquid, I believe, in these disposable vapes is recyclable.
Oh, yeah. We'll get into that. But what I'm talking about more is that it's being it all in one. It makes it a lot more difficult too, that that people are just like, oh, it's disposable. It's in the freaking name.
Oh, so
people will dispose of it. You know what I mean?
I waged war against just the term disposable for a really long time.
I don't blame you.
I wish right out of the gate they had just been called recyclable vapes, but
or something. Yeah.
Yeah, we're not going to change that terminology anytime soon.
But I think it does give the impression
that this is just something that you discard.
I mean,
you know, when you're done with it, it just goes in your garbage can.
I've had this for well over a year. You can see how worn and beat up it is.
Sure.
And the tank, I just recently got a new tank, but I haven't bought a new tank. I hadn't bought a new tank before then for like 4 years, you know, and I do. So the only thing I really have as waste are my nicotine bottles, which we turn upside down and get every last drop out of and then wash out before we toss them. And I actually wash my coils and reuse them as much as I can before I throw them away. So it's definitely a lot more friendly to the economy than disposables and all that plastic and stuff like that. So
one of the points I wanted to highlight on this topic, because this is something that I covered years ago too, is not necessarily just you know, seeing these like on the streets or out in, you know, wherever in the environment, but also at waste management facilities. This is also a massive problem because lithium ion batteries or lithium polymer batteries explode, cause fires. And so there are a number of waste management facilities that have to deal with this on top of now that argument can be made for discarded cell phones and laptop batteries and what have you. That's not the point. It's just the fact that there are far more disposable vapor products at landfills now than there are big laptop batteries and discarded cell phones and things like that. So it's just added to that, added fuel to the fire, so to speak, in an additional environmental problem, that now puts, a lot of waste management workers in unnecessary harm's way. Just because, again, and we'll go into, solutions or whatever, but just because that infrastructure for recycling of these products just really isn't necessarily there.
I was just reading this comment directed at me. It said, I can get recycling from my home all broken into categories at my work. All rubbish is included together as there is zero recycling available to retailers. Big picture issues.
Yeah.
I mean, the whole recycling thing is a whole nother topic that maybe I'll start a podcast on, but I'm with you on that. Cause there's a bunch of news things that have come out about that lately, but really, cause we're talking about the pros and cons of disposables, we have to kind of include the whole impact on the environment type thing versus having just open systems and stuff like that. So it's just one of those things that kind of ends up in the.
Yeah, this is kind of what I meant. Like, as far as, there's just not, people aren't discarding a bunch of laptops every week and they're not ending up. Sure, they're there, but they exist in far fewer numbers than disposables.
Exactly. All right, what's my next slide? Okay, the ugly. This one I was kind of not sure how to do. So I was sort of focused on things that are really not so good or bad as far as tangible, but more like optics and things, and Alex might have some stuff to add to this as well. Obviously it being popular with teens, the optics of that causes us all the teens, they have caused us problems for since I started with CASA in 2009. So, it's always been a problem with Save the Children. And because they took away the mango jewels, kids immediately went over to these things. Interestingly, when I was trying to Google photos of teens with vapes, with disposable vapes, almost all of them had mods in the pictures. It was really hard to find teens with disposable vapes that were not staged, that were not clearly by, Truth or Pave or something like that, But just like what happened with Juul, because it got popular with teens, even though we're at 2014 levels of teen vaping right now, so there's far fewer teens vaping, it's still an epidemic and it's still a crisis and all that kind of stuff because teens
are current use is at 1.7%.
Right. The few teens that are still choosing to use it to vape are choosing the disposables because that's what they can get. They can go on TikTok. And
I just want to highlight a not solution in chat.
Right.
This is Earn. I appreciate your input, but this is not a solution.
Yeah. You cannot ban youth for those listening on the podcast. They said,
youth. You can't ban the youth.
So obviously that's one of the ugly things about disposals being sold. Go ahead, Alex.
I did just want to throw out some numbers. I went to CDC and FDA to kind of see, the claim was that these products are becoming more and more popular with young people. So in 2022, 55.3% of youth who vape, reported using a disposable. That was followed by pre-filled or refillable pods at 25%, tanks and mod systems at 6.7%. Additionally, 12.8% reported not knowing the type of device used. And then this did go up, but keep in mind, this is going up in a shrinking pool of young people because youth use, I expect it to level off about right where it is. It could continue going down, but that sort of defies the odds a bit. But now it's in 2023, National Youth Tobacco Survey, 60.7% Sorry, I've got a, I'm dealing with leftovers of a cold. So
yeah, so that
60.7%.
60.7% of, because that's 2023's numbers, of 1.7%.
Wait, what's 1.7%?
Current use of e-cigarettes among...
No, that's Zyn. That's nicotine pouches.
When we discussed Zyn, our numbers for e-cigarettes and pouches, I believe, were both... I could be wrong. Maybe no, I'm wrong. Maybe
high school I'm use of vaping. Numbers. High school use of vaping was at 10% in 2023.
For current use, once in the last 30 days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Sorry. Wrong numbers. I'm still stuck on Zyn. And also, the curse of Chuck Schumer.
Also, it's something interesting. Another thing to note here is something that we have been saying for years. Anybody who's been into advocacy and following this is. You know, as these products became popular with adults, of course they became popular with young people. And so I think between maybe it was 2020 and 2022, I'm forgetting where I saw this. I was hurriedly researching all this before we came on. Among the adult population, 22% of adults use disposables, which I'm not a math wizard, but I think 22% of the adult population is likely greater than 60% of the youth population. Maybe they're a little close, but you know, if anybody wants to get into the argument about how all of this stuff is sort of laser focused on getting kids involved in vaping and nicotine, the reality is that most of the money and the demand is coming from adults. So there we
sure.
go.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. And obviously, this is a bone of contention with the industry, and we see how that's playing out with the tobacco industry going after all of everybody, pretty much. And you know, and then it's a valid point is that you know, of course, they haven't applied, and I think you know, I've been having kind of a discussion. I think it was in the We Are CASA group with someone who's been very critical of even CASA for not speaking out against disposables and fighting disposables and I guess calling for bans. He hasn't really been very clear on what exactly he'd want CASA to do, considering we're not an industry group. You know, from the consumer standpoint, we want to see as many products out there as available as possible for them. You know, and I think one of the points that I was going to make, I was going to go back, we talked, but he kind of stopped talking to me. I was going to point out that, you know, one of the things I did point out was that this is illegal on top of illegal. You know, everything that's in a vape shop today that's not authorized by the FDA is technically illegal, even it's in an open system, if it's a disposable, whatever it is. And by coming down on disposables, that's not going to help the situation any, because you know the only reason why those other products that have applied for PMTA and still not been authorized, and God only knows when it's going to happen, but I mean, if they were all following the law, they'd pull their products off the shelves and wait to get authorized. Because I think they had was it 60 days or 30 days or 6 months? I don't know. There's something written in there that they're supposed to pull their products, and the FDA basically has just said, you know, we're going to use our discretion as to whether or not we're going to go after you if you keep selling it. And so to make this argument that somehow products that have applied for PMTA, which we're thankful that they're including those in these PMTA laws, because there's a lot of them, but to say that those are more legal somehow than the ones who haven't applied, that's kind of a gray area.
I did also want to clarify, it's not all disposable companies have not, I mean, it's most, it's probably nearly all, but I don't want to make the mistake of saying every single disposable you see on the market is not getting a PMTA application sent in. Right. It's not true. And it's, again, this is an issue with, you know, getting marketing orders to begin with. This is a problem with FDA, which we'll get into after the ugly.
I don't know what the next one is.
Not easy Oh, irresponsible. Never mind. That's not what
I mean. And this has been a problem for a long time. And this, you know, this is we've had
Logan has thoughts, people. Logan has thoughts.
You know, there's always been this in vaping and e-cigarettes, you know, IP theft, irresponsible marketing, people threw their hands up in rage over the mod that looked like a Game Boy. You know, the apple juice carton e-liquids, like this has been a thing, or just straight up IP theft branding. You know, this sort of irresponsibility is not new to the e-cigarette category or vaping in itself. I just wanted to preface that people go nuts over, oh, these disposables are brightly colored, they look like kids products, this, that, and the other, whatever. It's geared towards youth, it's youth centric. This isn't new. This is not a new problem for disposables only.
It's not new, and it's not exclusive to vaping.
Absolutely.
This, you know, I a lot of this comes from cannabis as well. I mean, go to your local dispensary or whoever you're buying from and just run down the list of the names of strains and all of that. It's all been taken from, you know, it's all essentially, I mean, legally they're going to have to go through this now that it's being greenlit in a lot of places, but a lot of that kind of outlaw culture came from cannabis and is in the nicotine vaping space because we've all been outlawed. So, you know, it's one of those consequences of overbearing drug policy is that, you know, the IP infringement, you know, it's compared to like going to jail or paying tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands in fines, the IP doesn't really matter. And it's not like, you know, a candy company. Well, they actually did. I know M&M Mars went after some cannabis producers for Skittles. But it's not very common as far as I know. And a lot of that is that nobody's getting confused with, you know, a bud versus a pack of candy bits or something. So it's up to the companies who own that IP to then go after. But if it's not really affecting their brand, then they don't care about it. They're not going to spend the money on the lawyers to do it.
Right.
Yeah. Somebody's not buying a vape instead of, you know, what is this, Minion vape instead of a Minion plush toy or a Minion video. It's not taking a customer away from them.
Yeah, I believe
that. It's like if a Minion was a 2-liter bottle.
Yeah.
Yep. It's weird.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, I hate to use the term slippery slope, but the irresponsible marketing is kind of in that category too, because you could get to the point where, you know, we're going to start sounding like an anti crowd when we, you know, we're like, oh, well, these products come in the color pink, you know, and there's definitely a nuanced conversation. That's why I stick to things like direct IP and stuff like that, where we're being a bit more definitive and kind of what is irresponsible marketing.
Right.
But yeah, you know, there's definitely plenty of it out there. And like Alex said, it's not exclusive to vaping. I've literally seen, you know, cannabis Skittles, a bag that is completely, it looks exactly like a bag of Skittles, branding gummies, and all. Yeah. And up in the corner, it says in a little bubble, medicated.
Yeah.
So it's irresponsible.
I just like to point out that, and this is like, you know, this is what somebody, you know, other people bring up who are so angry that, you know, maybe Kassad's not doing enough to fight against disposables. But the thing is that there's so much nuance in this. We got accused of this from way back in the day. I mean, people were taking Coca-Cola cans and toys and stuff back in 2010, 2011, before kids had ever even heard of vaping, and they were converting them into vapes. It was just a fun thing that they were doing. They were taking, you know, they were taking, like I just put up there before, about the one that looked like a Game Boy. Somebody took a Game Boy and did it. They took calculators, flashlights, all that sort of stuff.
Where the term mod comes from.
Exactly.
It's just so, modifying things into a device.
So, and the other thing is that over the years of, you know, of going on, what, 15 years now, or no, 14 years, whatever, how long have I been doing this? I've seen so many misguided people, and I'm sorry to use the word misguided, but I feel it is misguided, that want to blame somebody, players in the market, players in the industry, vapers, the consumers, for what the anti-nicotine people are doing. And you just can't do that because they will always point to something. You know, back in the very early days, we called them e-cigarettes. Oh, we can't call them e-cigarettes. This is why they're coming after us. We can't do this because they think they're e-cigarettes. No, they just hate us because it's got nicotine in it. No, no, no. It's the e-cigarette. So, okay, so we start calling it vaping. Well, they just started calling it ENDS themselves. They didn't care what we called it, really. And then it was, oh, it's the people blowing clouds. It's the cloud chasers. It's all their fault. It's the cloud chasers. Well, you know, cloud chasers are largely not even around anymore. It's banned. Vaping is banned in public in so many places, yet they're still trying to shut us down. So obviously it wasn't the cloud chasers. Then it was Juul. And now the scapegoat that we like to point to is disposables. And, you know, you got to remember that. And one of the points that that person made to me was, you know, we need to get the antis on our side and get rid of these bad players. They need to be banned, you know, because, you know, the vape shops and stuff, we do this, we do that. And so these bad players need to be put out. And that just tells me that they have not been around doing this very long, because they would know that as soon as the disposables were gone and youth vaping doesn't really go away 100%, because they will always vape. They will come up with the data. They're like, oh my God, 0.5% of teens are vaping still. That's 500,000 people, you guys. 500,000 kids. We have to save them. You know, and guess what? Nobody's selling disposables anywhere because they were double, triple banned. So what's left? The vape shops. They're going to blame the vape shops. That you can't, it's like that old saying of, you know, they came for this and I did nothing. They came for that. I did nothing. Now they've come for me and nobody's left to speak up for me. You know, that was a very quick summary, but you know what I'm saying? So it's sorry. Whew, got myself all riled up.
All flustered, all worked up over here.
I'm clumped. But that's the case, is that, so are there a lot of problems with disposables? Yeah, but can we dump everything, the problems that this industry and that we're having with, against, you know, from the anti side? It doesn't matter to them. They will just pick at us bit by bit by bit by bit until it's all gone.
And like you said, you know, going back, all of the big arguments against disposables that antis are making are the same arguments they were making against all of these products before disposables came to the market to begin with.
Same exact stuff.
Yeah.
I had one more point on my list here under the ugly, but we've sort of covered it in the bad, and that was on the impact in the environment. So I'm sort of backtracking a little bit here, but we are moving on to the solutions here and we'll be wrapping up soon. But just to give some numbers. So first of all, I want to, this is actually a pretty good segue into, is there a solution? And going back to the recycling and environmental impact, when I go and look, just how do you recycle vapes, or are there, you know, do stores have their like take back programs, you know, bring it back to the vape shop? Some of the stores will, like any brand, there are other manufacturers that will accept any brand, and what they do with it after that, I understand. I'm not going to debate this here, but yes, I, you know, have seen the videos too. Recycling is basically a scam and it all ends up in, you know, India or Pakistan or somewhere in a parking lot, never to be dealt with. But to give some context or for reference here, I went to a site, podsalt.com, which I think sells product. So I'm not trying to promote them, just giving you my reference. To put it in perspective, it's been reported that every second, two disposable vapes are being tossed away, which accounts for 10 tons of lithium being sent to landfills. That amount would make enough electric engines for 1,200 electric cars. I'm assuming that they meant batteries. And then in recycling, Vaping 360 has a post on this. But I think worth noting that the three references they link to are all in the UK, not in the United States. Not to say that there aren't companies in the United States that are doing this. I just didn't see them immediately when I started researching this. And so there's a good article, How to Properly Dispose of and Recycle Disposable Vapes, mostly relevant to you folks living in the UK. But if you want to be inspired as an American business person, definitely go check it out and see what you can be doing. I understand there's a cost to all of this. Recycling is expensive. I assume, especially when we're talking about, you know, lithium, separating metals and all of that. There are people out there, entrepreneurial folks with a science background, who are tackling this issue. And I just want to make it clear, I still believe this is a tremendous opportunity for anyone in the vaping industry. If we can solve this issue, just at least make it better. It's, you've got all of the product. Like, if you ever needed, you know, a source of something to help work on solving this problem, this is it. The other aspect of this is, manufacturers, this is your time to pay attention to what's going on. If you don't start making changes and make these products easier to disassemble by the consumer, the state and the federal government are going to do it for you. We don't have any more time. This has to start happening now. You can be motivated by repairing the image of the industry if you want. That's fine. But all of this plastic, all of these chemicals, all of this stuff ending up in landfills, in the stream that runs through your town, it's not doing anybody any favors, and it's not going away. We're not just going to be able to turn. This isn't the 50s anymore. It's here. It's on our shores that are rapidly encroaching where we live. So this is a problem I think that the vaping industry can take a lead on. There just has to be, I have faith, there is a money-making opportunity here for somebody.
You think.
And so, for those people who have the spirit, go out and get it, and just do it. I believe in you. I don't know what else I need to say about that. And I'm about ready to start talking about other solutions, but if you guys wanted to jump in.
No,
man, I'm hyped and motivated to just recycle lithium right now. Thank you for that.
I have a huge bag of batteries in a drawer in my kitchen. So, you know, one of these days I will actually, but I don't throw them away.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, you know, in most places, it's not easy. We've talked about this before. You know, there is no standard. There are a couple websites out there. I don't have them handy, and I should have looked them up for, you know, links in here. Maybe we'll put them in the links in the description afterwards, you know, of where to go to find out, you know, where you can go in your town to recycle batteries and other e-waste. Most places should have something at your transfer station that collects and separates all the e-waste. There is a proper way to dispose of all of this stuff. And e-cigarettes are e-waste. And as I think BG Iraji was mentioning earlier, yes, the nicotine is a problem. I don't have a solution for this, but do just want to note that any schools or, you know, any kind of government type facility that's confiscating vapor products, the cops, the schools, etc., they have to dispose of nicotine according to federal law. They have to handle it like a hazardous substance, and that disposal is expensive. So, you know, and I guarantee you that money is not coming out of the football budget. So it's a big issue. And if there's a way to make that cheaper and more, because it's not, kids aren't going to stop using these products. It's just, this is how drugs work. It's somebody's got to solve that. And it is an issue. But there is plastic, there are metal bits. All of this stuff can be separated. Most of what an e-cigarette is can be recycled. It's just the liquid that is a big barrier. And of course, being able to separate it efficiently. Ideally, consumers can take care of that in their home without the risk of blowing their faces off.
Please don't just start taking like hammers to your disposables to get them apart. There are plenty of videos on YouTube about what happens when you hit lithium ion batteries with hammers.
Yeah, don't do
that. In case you're curious.
No, don't tell
me. I've looked it up on YouTube. It's thrilling. It's absolutely riveting to watch.
Well, I mean,
we have an adult audience, I'm telling you.
somebody videoed that and put it up on the internet so that you don't have to. So,
right. That's what I mean.
You want to see stuff blow up.
It's kind of like watching Jackass, but not actually participating in doing these things.
Live vicariously.
It comes up like, please don't do this at home. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So I guess I don't want to pose this as like a simple solution to all of this, but I think it is definitely probably one of the biggest parts of the solution, is that the path to marketing has to become more accessible. we need an environment where these products are registered with the officials. This is that kind of, you know, what degree of regulation are we willing to accept? If you're a shop owner and you're just like, you know, F the government, F the FDA and all of this, we don't need them. Well, this is the environment that you get when we just throw up our hands and say, screw it, we're going to sell and do whatever we want. You are facing competition from, you know, manufacturers all the way on the other side of the world who don't care. All they care about is being able to produce thousands of units and get them sold. And they can do it. Anybody can go, you know, this article, another article I was reading, I'm not debating the article, but, you know, anybody with enough money, not much, can basically start an e-cigarette disposable company. They just got to go to the right manufacturer in China and get the, you know, their logo and whatever on there and come up with some flavors and some marketing and boom, you're in business. You can do that for under $100,000. And so if you want the lawlessness and you don't want to deal with a regulator, then this is what we've got right now. So it's just like the same arguments for, I think, at least legalizing or decriminalizing drugs. Legalizing, I think, is better because then you have more transparency. You're able to track, you know, what these products are, where they're coming from, whether or not they are genuine, which we were talking about counterfeiting before we came on. There's a lot of counterfeit stuff out there, and it's very difficult to verify that you're getting the real thing. Even if you can do a verification of something, they're likely going to, you know, do some sort of, you know, copy of that and throw you off and make it look like it's legit, but it's not. That's the world of counterfeiting. The point is, the easier it is to bring these things to market, meaning let's establish some standards, let's get some targets that companies can hit. I understand that it's still going to be expensive, but if consumers can feel assured that they have access to the genuine article, and it's got to be at a competitive price, it's got to be the diversity of products that we have all come up with until FDA stepped in and started doing things and all this stuff got shoved on the illicit market. It has to appeal to people. We will pay a little bit more, just a little bit, to buy the genuine article and not feel concerned that we're, I don't know, funding terrorism halfway around the globe, or, you know, we're funding communism, brutal dictatorship somewhere. Whatever. If we know that we're buying from an American company that's making this product for Americans, Americans are going to feel a little bit better about that. And are going to be more inclined. I'm not going to say it's 100%, but we're going to be more inclined to support those businesses. And we can't do that now. We don't have that system. We have, what, three or four companies with 15 nicotine products on there that all taste like tobacco. That's what we've got. The rest of it is underground. Or they got, you know, some sort of court-issued stay, or their application is, you know, pending with FDA. I have no idea how long that's going to.
Oh, pause. It's too good of a rant to have Alex go full robot right now.
am I stuck?
You did.
Yeah, I think you broke StreamYard for a moment. No, you're good now.
Anyway.
It was just so, you know, fiery.
and I mean, this is what, you know, the trade associations that have enough funding, they can do federal lobbying. You know, nobody wants to open up the Tobacco Control Act and liberalize how we're treating tobacco products. This is a long haul. There's a lot. I mean, I don't know. Maybe there's something that comes down the pike in, you know, a couple of years and everybody changes their mind about this. I don't know how many more studies we need to show of people quitting smoking by switching to these products to really demonstrate that they are valuable and good for public health. There's certainly a lot of money in the anti-advocacy side. Way more money than CASA's ever seen. And so it's not palatable right now to make these changes. It's really unfortunate. And, you know, I don't want to stray off course here, but this may be one of those issues that nobody really wants to solve because there is some political capital in taking one side or the other. Who cares? I'm trying to not talk about another issue that probably usually gets people pretty fired up. But it's another one that we just don't want to solve because, you know, politics. And the other thing is, this may fall under the ugly, but this is again, a policy issue. The reason we're here is because the policies suck. and it's pushed all this stuff onto the illicit market. In that vein, I had a conversation with somebody at an expo I went to in Miami. I went to the Alt Pro Expo in Miami. There were nicotine products there, but it's also it's that health and wellness alternatives industry type thing. So you had your CBDs and different types of THC and kratom and all your mushroom stuff. It was interesting. But part of the conversation I had, I was asking about, you know, funding advocacy efforts. And one of the responses was manufacturers just kind of want to lay low right now. They don't want to stick their necks out and be seen as stirring the pot because they don't want to come down on the business end of the FDA or some sort of state agency. And that's, to me, I understand, you know, there are practical reasons for doing that, but that it's kind of heartbreaking. You know, it's one of those things where it's we used to sort of joke about like, well, if I can't do this, then the terrorists win, you know, well, they're winning. They have beat down the vape industry to the point that everybody is hiding under a rock. I'm glad that they're able to continue their business and glad that people are still switching away from smoking cigarettes, but it's absolutely heartbreaking that anybody feels that way. And I can wish all I want that things were different, but this is definitely one of those issues that you know, I'm going to stay away from buzzwords. Like, you know, I'm not going to even say that, but you know, this whole thing it continues to be a consumer revolt. The cigarette industry failed us. Public health failed us. And we took matters into our own hands. And we're going to keep doing that. It doesn't matter what the bans are. It doesn't matter what the laws are. The only real damage being done is, well, first of all, discouraging people from switching, which I'm assuming is slowing down a bit. We're probably going to reach some sort of plateau this year, last year, I don't know, next year. But it has given the edge to illicit sellers. China can adapt. They can turn on a dime. There was a Peter Sardo video from years ago. He reviewed a product, and within like a matter of days, they sent him a replacement with almost all of the points that he had noted. That's how quick they can turn this stuff around. That's how quick these devices are evolving. And American companies, American retailers, they don't stand a chance. You're either going to sell those products or you're going to fight an uphill battle because the policies are in your way. This is not, you can blame convenience stores all you want. You can blame the Chinese manufacturers all you want, but it's American policies that are screwing you over. And so I hope there's a way to, you know, direct that rage, and it's going to come in the form of dollars. You're either supporting your trade group. You should be supporting a trade group. And CASA could definitely use that money to engage your customers, but we can't give up. We can't just hide under a rock. It's only going to get worse until we get that breakthrough study. I don't know. Nobody pays attention to the research.
Except for me.
You know how many breakthrough studies we've had?
Yeah, I mean, they all feel like, okay, cool, finally, this is it. Yeah. We've got 3 years of longitudinal data from people with COPD whose conditions have improved in their vaping. That should blow the lid off this whole... No. Like, whatever. I'm just getting angry and frustrated here, and I think my rant is just meandering, but...
Deep breath. No, you're doing good.
But the point is... you know, it's just like everything else. It's policies. Don't adopt the language of your oppressors. Don't adopt their tactics. Infighting only serves Campaign for Tobacco Free Kids and Truth Initiative. And as we mentioned, you know, all this policy stuff started in 2008, 2009, before there were the big cloud blowing mods, before there was the cornucopia of flavors. It is called contempt prior to investigation, and it is their guiding light all through this issue. For more than 10 years, that's what's been going on. Don't blame each other. Love one another.
We're not going to sing Kumbaya now, are we?
Under the tent, we need to do this together. And I think, you know, it would be great if the C-store lobby were on board with this. They have contracts and agreements with the tobacco companies. So, you know, like not likely, but Yeah, so.
It's and that's kind of what I was getting at before, is that every little thing that when they turn us on ourselves, the turn that, you know, when they turn vapor against vapor by, you know, blaming the cloud chasers, blaming the companies for what they named it or what we call it, or, you know, blaming Juul, blaming people who make Game Boy mods, people, you know, it's like, we've been there, done that with this. When you've been doing this for a long time, this disposal things and all the hatred going against disposables is been there, done that. It's not once has this worked. Not once has trying to ban a certain segment of the vaping community or industry, not once has that ever led to them letting up on us. Never once. Because that's not what they want. They're going to take baby steps. They will take every win they can, whether it's, you know, they were when Trump banned the flavors and what his flavor ban, they were complaining about it, but secretly, you know, if you got their emails, if you did a file request in their emails, they were cheering and celebrating because that was just one more step. And don't ever think that it will stop with whatever thing they're complaining about loudest at the moment. You know, because vapes have been kind of dying out for the whole youth thing. What do? They moved on to Zyn and nicotine pouches. You know, it's you cannot. So if you're in this industry, you're basically listening to the people who want to destroy you and believing all the lies they're saying and buying in on it, thinking it's going to save you. And it won't. It won't save you. We need to all fight together because when we give in, if you give them an inch, they will take a mile. And that is what they have shown us time and time again, not just with vaping, but with snus and even with cigarettes and any other kind of tobacco over the years. You know, we just want to have indoor separate sections for smokers and non-smokers. Oh, if it's a slippery slope, you're going to soon be banning in people's houses. Never, never. You know, that was then. And now 30 years later, they're banning it in people's houses. So, I mean, they hate you. You will never make them happy. They hate us. We will never make them happy. There is nothing we can do or ban or do anything that will make them let up. And all you're doing when you say, oh yeah, ban disposables are horrible, you're just supporting all their stuff that they're saying that they're just going to turn around and use against you next is really sure. How it's going to happen.
Well, so, all they wanted, Kristen, was no smoking on planes.
Yeah, and that then was it was it. Separate sections and restaurants.
That was it, right?
And they said, yeah. they said people who said there's a slippery slope with that said, you're crazy, there's no slippery slope, and literally you can't smoke outside. Just
in one of the most well-ventilated environments that a human being can be in, that's
right?
The only
place. Planes?
Just
yeah.
On planes.
Yeah, that's true. Okay.
Dang. Wow. Kristen's going to have a lot of fun making rant YouTube short things out of this one. I'm really stoked for
it. I don't know how I'm
going
to do it. There's so much good stuff that Alex was saying. I'm going to have to probably make 10 different clips.
I feel like I'm the only one that didn't rant. All right, let me get started.
You had some good stuff. I was paying attention. I'm trying to get some of that too.
Yeah, lots of good stuff. Obviously, not only is vaping a hot button topic, and I've been, you know, really watching chat a lot. And that's why I kind of addressed some stuff earlier. Within the community, you know, you talk about infighting. There's been a lot of hot discussion in chat just during the hour and a half that we've been live. Obviously, everybody has their own opinions here, and I'm not trying to invalidate anyone's opinions. But, you know, Kristen really makes a great point. Kristen's been doing this for a really long time, and I think there's a lot of value in what she just had to say about I don't know, the death by a thousand cuts, the boiling frog, the slippery slope, whatever you want to call it. And it's just something that we all need to be mindful of. So I highly encourage everybody, if you missed anything that Kristen just said, go watch it again, because she's a wealth of knowledge. She's been doing this for a very long time, much longer than me, for sure. So yeah. And Alex's rant as well that ended in a full robot, which, you know, I love seeing Alex get fired up. A lot of times during the stream, he's very calm, collected, professional. And then when you get him fired up, man, I just want to go tear down buildings right now.
Mallory says the rage sweats are real.
Yeah. True. Rage sweats. Our good friend Nick Green calls that truth butter. I don't know if anybody's hip to Grim Green or whatever, but the rage sweats. It's weird, gross truth butter. But yeah, lots of good points. Thank you. I think that is where we're going to wrap this stream up, though. I think that's a great place to end our discussion on disposables, which obviously we're not done talking about these products. You know, as Alex pointed out earlier, they're not going anywhere. They're absolutely not going anywhere. So thank you. Thank you to everybody who tuned in today. Thank you for everybody who's watching in the replay. Our past couple of streams have had a really great turnout as far as you know, live viewer counts. So thank you. Huge shout out to everybody who makes these streams. We definitely appreciate it all. Alex made a great point earlier about contributing to CASA and to trade associations and things like that. I highly encourage everybody, if you can give, please give. We have donate buttons and stuff on all of our places on our website, stuff like that. There's plenty of places and ways to donate to CASA. And I know we've made a point about it in the past. One of the best ways, absolute best ways, even if it's not much, donated to CASA is reoccurring donations. If you only have a few dollars that you could give every month, $1, $2, $3, $5 that you could give to CASA, reoccurring donations reassure us in the money that's coming in and what we can continue to keep doing. One-time donations are also great, but if you are capable of setting up a reoccurring donation, please do. Definitely goes a long way. Even a few dollars goes a long way. Every penny adds up. Another great way to donate too is check out our merch store. If you want something back in return for the money you give us, Danielle Jones has created an entire wardrobe of awesome tobacco harm reduction merchandise and t-shirts. You get to be a walking billboard of tobacco harm reduction. So go check out the merch store. Other than that, sign up for CASA. It's absolutely free. We don't blast your inbox full of things that you don't need to know, just things you need to know when you need to know it to be a better advocate and to get involved. On top of that, if you're on Facebook, I have a Facebook, but I don't use Facebook. But if you do, like millions of other people out there, Kristen does. I don't know which side of the screen I'm on right now. check out your state Facebook group, your CASA state Facebook group. If you live in a state or anywhere part of the United States of America, there's a page that you can join and you can be active in and get involved with. Otherwise, what else is part of the spiel? If you like listening to audio versions of us talking about all of these things, you can do that wherever your podcast, wherever you listen to podcasts. I pull this audio every week from our live streams, edit it, and ship it out across the audio interwebs. You can go check all of that stuff out as well. Follow us on all the social medias, CASA, at CASA Media, pretty much across the board, at CASA Media, whether that's X or Instagram, everywhere. It's at CASA Media. I think that's it.
I'm going to add this one.
Did I do all the things? Kristen, the floor is yours because I don't know what I've forgotten.
You did testimonial already, right?
I didn't do testimonials. Share your story. Yeah, absolutely. Also available on CASA.org. I don't know how many we're up to right now, but it's not nearly enough. We need 100 million more. So if you have a story to tell about how these products have helped you, whether you've quit, whether you've cut down, whether you're able to use these products in situations where you can't use other products, whatever that story is that's benefited you through smoke-free alternatives, share that story on CASA's testimonial page.
Yeah, we haven't hit 14,000 yet on that, so we really do need people to do that.
Yeah, we're only like 6 million away from what we need.
And Alex, do you want to take this last one? Go to your state pages, check for your. I'll do it. Never mind.
Yeah. I'm sorry, I was reading some chat stuff.
Go to the state CASA.org. Go to lawmaker lookup at under get involved state locator. We did not do a legislative rundown this week, but there's a hearing coming up in Minnesota on Monday. If you want to know what's going on in your state, go to the look up your state, scroll down, and you will be able to see what call to actions are currently active in your area. I think that's it.
Yeah, there's plenty of them. There's still plenty of calls to action ongoing right now.
Sadly, there's a lot.
Pages and pages of calls to action. Yeah, the best thing you can do is head over there, click on the clicky map. If you know what state you live in, click it. click it or scroll down. There's a whole list. They're kind of all over the place right now. So,
and we will see you in 2 weeks. I'm not sure where that takes us to. That would be
sometime in April.
We'll just go with that. April 6th.
We'll see you guys in April.
That would be April 6th. My kid's on spring break next week. So.
Oh, mine too. Actually, mine don't start spring break until Friday.
Okay.
Next week.
All right.
Well, thank you, Earn. We heart Kasa. Yeah, that's my last point. I guess if I have a final ending to the spiel that I give, is that Kasa is not just Alex who goes to expos, or Kristen who creates the blog, or the board discussing, you know, stuff. Like, we're Kasa. All of us are Kasa. All 300 billion members of us. We don't have 300 billion members, but we can definitely use it. I
wish we were.
Yeah, there aren't even that many people on the planet. But still, everybody who is a member of Kasa, we're Kasa. And the biggest strength that we have is numbers and our voices. So please, if you're not yet a member, please go join. All are welcome. The gates are open. Everyone join Kasa. Tell your friends, tell your family, tell grandma. Text it to random numbers. Join Kasa. That's it.
All right. Deliver. All right, everybody, enjoy the rest of your week. And as Logan likes to say, be good to each other. And we will see you next time.